Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Man, do we have a group, and I am very excited to have them all here and to talk about the news of the day. We'll get started. Just a reminder, you can join us at panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org, and we would love to hear what is on your mind. So let's introduce the group. Hey, Rich Honan is here, corporate attorney, our dear friend, and with us 2 weeks in a row, man. I'm liking this.
Yeah, well, maybe you are. I'm not sure, but the listeners are.
No, we were very. We
love thank you for inviting me.
We're thrilled you are here. Thank you very much. Vera Acarius Kelly joins us. She is a Siena College professor of comparative politics. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
You well, it's great to so be back.
So smart. And when we have any question about international relations or comparative politics, you're the one. And we are so happy to see
you. Well, thank you. I feel like you're setting me up for something, Alan.
Really? Why do people always think that?
I'm deeply suspicious about what happened.
Well, I get it.
There is, I want to also introduce Fran Berman, who is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI. However, the news of the day, which I just want to scream from the rooftops, is that Fran Berman has been elected to the American Academy of Arts and Sciences.
Wow. Wow. Congratulations.
Ooh, so excited. So fantastic.
Her class includes Michelle Obama, Jonathan Franzen, and Judith Butler. Not bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Good
that's
company.
Great,
yeah.
That's great company.
Newly elected members they come in with compelling achievements in academia, business, government, and public affairs. And one of the reasons to honor extraordinary achievement is because the pursuit of excellence is so often accompanied by disappointment and self-doubt, according to the president of the Academy of Arts and Sciences. We are pleased to recognize the excellence of our new members, celebrate their compelling achievements, invite them to join the Academy and contribute to its work.
Wow. Well,
my goodness.
Really impressed.
Thank you
and I'm
very
so
much.
Glad you're sitting right next to me.
Oh,
I hope it's rubbing off on me.
By the way,
very exciting.
And Rich, did you know this? That the Academy was founded in 1780 by John Adams.
I did know that.
You did know that.
I know.
Yeah.
No,
that is really
which shows
cool.
you how yeah. little you know. That's he was getting things done while he was being vice president.
That's October 2019 in Cambridge, Massachusetts. The new class will be inducted, and you are
that
a part
is
of
so
it.
Great.
We will be inducted. Yeah, wow. I hope to become best friends with Michelle Obama.
You kids have a lot in common. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Did Adams put Jefferson in?
I can look. I don't know. I don't know. That's a very good question.
Fran, we're very proud of you.
Yeah. That's very cool.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
That's very,
thank you.
Very, very cool.
Well, I will share it with all the listeners of WAMC.
Oh, good.
That is really great news, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Very, very exciting. Okay. Alan has some exciting news, too. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, good morning. I suppose you're referring to the incredible Pete Seeger concert, memorial concert, that's coming up. At the Linda on May 3rd, and it's the incredible Happy Trowne will be leading us all in song and telling us what's what. He was a very close friend of Pete's. They would sing out together every time. I know one story about this, and that is that at the memorial concert that many of us went to, actually his birthday concert. Remember that, Joe? You
I
were
do.
There, I was
I
there.
Went, yep.
Pete comes in, there are 10,000 people sitting there, and he walks through. He sees Happy, and he grabs him. Now, Happy told me this story. He'll kill me for telling it. He sees him and brings him over to a corner and talking to Happy. So Happy knows Pete. He's a huge Pete Seeger fan, and in his own right, he's one of the most talented folk singers that there is today. And we'll all be there. I'll be there, and I hope everybody else will, too. 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-9262. Right now you can get in on it, or you can go to WAMC.org and do it that way.
All right, you heard it. WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262, 1-800-323-WAMC. So let's get started with the news for today. And we begin... I think we begin. Hold on one second. Yes, I was. Well, of course, the news that came out this morning at 6:06 a.m. was that Joe Biden, we talked about this yesterday, but Joe Biden made it official, sent out the campaign video, and announced that he will be entering the race for president of the United States. This was obviously long anticipated, although there were months of hesitation on the vice president's part, most recently about 6 weeks ago over some concerns of his behavior with women. And so he finally let some dust settle, released this video, 3.5 minutes, laying out his reasons for running. He chose not to talk about policy issues or his biography, but instead began by recalling the white supremacist march through Charlottesville and a counter-protest, and Mr. Trump's comment that there were very fine people on both sides. In that moment, Mr. Biden said, quote, "I knew the threat to our nation was unlike any I'd seen in my lifetime. We are in a battle for the soul of this nation," he said. "I believe history will look back on 4 years of this president and all he embraces as an aberrant moment in time. But if we give Donald Trump 8 years in the White House, he will forever and fundamentally alter the character of this nation, who we are, and I cannot stand by and watch that happen." Is that a good start, good place to start for the former Vice President, Alan?
You know, look, to me, there's only one important thing right now, and that's getting rid of Trump. And I think he makes that point. I think he's going to be the basically middle-of-the-road candidate who many Democrats like, but I don't know that they're enough. My feeling is right now Bernie Sanders may well win the primary, and I don't know if he can beat Trump in the election. Right now, we have an 8-point lead for Biden that can either go up or it can go down. The press hates a leader, and the name of the game is to bring them down. It always has been, and I don't think it's going to be any different right now. But to me, the question is, who can beat Trump? I happen to think Biden is the one.
So maybe that's a more practical point of view, I think. But, you know, when I heard this morning, what struck me as I was reading about it was all the things that, of all the things they said about him, they were all roughly negative, and there was nothing about his presidential vision.
Precisely.
They talked about him being too old. They talked about him, you know, was he appropriate or inappropriately affectionate with people? They talked about him waffling for a long time because now the field is really big. And, you know, I know things about the other candidates. I know that Kamala Harris cares about immigration. I know that Mayor Pete wants, you know, a new generation of things. I know that, you know, Bernie wants free college. And by the way, I don't know what any of them think about net neutrality, data privacy, surveillance. So that's going to be really important to me. But, you know,
get
Joe
the
Biden,
academy on that.
Yeah, yeah, I will. Yeah, yeah.
Working.
Because I now have a lot of control.
Yes.
But I do think that, you know, Biden, if Biden wants to be a real guy, he's got to have some sort of message about what he's for and not just all of the things that are negatives.
Isn't that troubling for him, though, to have been, you know, to have been in politics at that level for that long, and he still has to come out and define, you know, on a policy basis, you know, where he is on things? Do you think that's going to be a problem for him?
I don't know. I mean, I just think it's really difficult. I mean, typically the conversation is almost never about policy. You know, it's about the soundbite. It's about whether you wear the flag pin. It's about, you know, did you touch somebody or, you know, and those are important things. But, you know, I do think that your time when you get out there and you declare, I want to run for president, you ought to have a good reason that people know about. And so I'm surprised not to hear what that is.
Right.
But when you think about it, Buttigieg and Beto are also basically narrative candidates at the moment. We're in this new world where we tell a lot of stories or sort of frame issues around particular events. And I think Biden is trying to modernize his approach. And so this is like a restart button. We know so much about Biden, in essence, from his years of service for this government. So if you wanted to, in essence, put together a profile for him, we could on policy issues. But I'm curious to see what he will say in the coming days.
Yeah.
But I believe the new approach now is to sort of tell a counter narrative to what Trump represents in this country at the moment. So the storytelling is almost at the core of what we find at the moment in terms of new and exciting candidates, potential candidates. And it probably will change towards more policy once people ask specific questions. But it's an interesting observation, you know, to think about how candidates talk about themselves within the context of what has changed in the United States.
Yeah, and what I was noticing
Bernie
was
has,
that...
I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. What I was noticing just was that how other people are talking to him, because you're right, you know, he's you know, and I'm not being exactly fair, you know, he's been announced for exactly 3 picoseconds, so, you know.
Although his announcement, has been coming for a couple of months.
It's been coming for a couple of months. But I was just sort of, you know, looking at the sort of reflection of other people. I'm sorry, Rich.
No, go. I agree. I think, you know, his name's been there for a while. And I agree with you, what you say about, you know, the narrative is what people are selling, except in Bernie's case. I mean, Sanders is really, I obviously don't agree with any of them, but Sanders is out there, you know, but he's out there touting policy.
Right.
You know, and you could argue, oh, well, you know, how do you pay for it and things like that? But he's talking true policy you know, more than any of the, you know, kind of the top candidates. You know, you wonder if that's going to force people to kind of get pulled along and discuss those issues on his terms.
And I think that's what's happening right now, because Bernie came out with the voting rights for felons or you know, current prisoners and under what circumstances. And he sort of led that conversation, except I think other candidates can also sort of watch what happens to Bernie when he comes up with these ideas and position themselves, you know, to the right of, slightly to the right of him, to the center of him, you know. So he's like the experimenter with particular political ideas, and all the other candidates seem to position themselves according to where Bernie goes.
I mean, the more you say, the more you can get hurt, right? I mean, if you start off and you're Bernie Sanders and you say that I think the Boston Marathon bombers should be able to vote, that's the narrative, as you say. Mm-hmm. That's the story for a good long while until somebody changes.
But Bernie
he's gotten. I will say, I'm sorry, Alan, but he has gotten the Bernie specifically has actually gotten some props from, you know, the Fox News type people. You know, whether it's on the news side or the analysis side, for saying kind of what I just said, which is, you know, we don't agree with anything he says, but he stands up there. And, you know, I know we've set the bar pretty low in this country. You know, you just stand up there, you know.
Hey, Rich, they want him. They want him. The last, you know, the Democrats might very well elect Bernie as their nominee, select him. But the Fox people and the president of the United States, who is saying virtually nothing except to occasionally call him Crazy Bernie, want him as the candidate. The last guy they want is Joe Biden.
No, that's not true. They would
no,
say,
you mean that's what you think isn't true.
Well, I think I watch more Fox News probably than you do.
Rich.
And I may reflect more of, you know, kind of what their base is. Nobody's worried about Bernie. I think people are a little more worried about Biden. I don't think anybody on my side of the fence feels, frankly, that either of them are going to be there at the end.
Rich, do you,
at the end of the nomination process.
Rich, do you think there will be a line by which Trump has real contenders on the Republican side?
Not real contenders. I'm sure there'll be people who run against him, but it's going to be tough. I mean, who would it be?
I don't know.
I don't know.
In Massachusetts,
but they would have emerged by now.
You
know,
Bill Weld, you mean?
Yes. You know, in Massachusetts, we're allowed to take a ballot.
Yeah.
If you're an unenrolled voter in either side, and I well may take a ballot for a Republican ballot and vote for Bill Weld.
But don't you think, Rich, that the White House actually is a little nervous about Biden because they have expressed that because Biden is very quick on his feet and the sort of Trumpian style of having these one-liners or these descriptors that he uses to put down people. And Biden is very good with short, snide remarks as well. He's a lot of experience, and none of the other candidates are prepared for that style.
Well, Vera, having already talked about my, you know, respect for Biden, I want to say that there's another side to what you just said.
Yes, of course.
If there's some dog poo in the street, he's going to step in it.
Well, he is, you know, coming up with various statements. Regularly in the past, he came up with various statements that were rather mind-boggling in the past. That
Indeed.
Is correct, policy-wise as well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not saying I don't think I don't know what they think in the White House, but I don't think they're dismissing anybody. I agree with you that I think Biden is probably more formidable to them than Sanders, just because you know Sanders his ideas are just so beyond what at least what we think are the mainstream.
And he'll get the purples. Sanders ain't getting the purples. Yeah, he's getting the Democrats.
True. Yeah, I don't know that anyone thinks that either of them bring in the 3 million people who didn't vote for Hillary. That demographic of people, the 3 million
Agreed.
Who voted for President Obama and didn't vote for Hillary. And I don't know internally within the Democratic Party whether either of those deliver those people.
Mm. And Bloomberg is still not in the race.
And Bloomberg is still not what?
In the race. And
he's not getting in the race.
Well, he's not, and he shouldn't, really, I don't think.
Well, I like him.
I would like to see him in the race.
I don't like somebody who, as a mayor, can't seem to want to step down and likes to hang on to power.
Well, there is that.
Too long.
No, there is that. You're right about that.
That's not a good pattern.
I got great respect for the guy, but he did buy that third term. Mm-hmm. And the only way he did it is he delivered it to the city council, which also wanted to run for an extra term.
Yeah.
And they said, okay.
I mean, that smacks of...
Some people call that strategic, Alan.
Yes, that's true. Some people say anything they want in order to back their candidates.
Rich. I think the real question is, and again, I don't know what goes on within the Democratic Party. You know, Alan, I certainly defer to you on observationally and knowing what goes on there. You know, I think one of the problems, I've gotten pilloried on this show before for saying things like the Democratic Party is becoming an anti-white male party in its rhetoric, I wonder how they're going to be able to square that with their nominating process. I just think that's a difficulty.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't. I have to say I don't agree with the anti-white male because I happen to know a lot of white males who are actually enthusiastic about a lot of the potential candidates, including very young people. So it might be the voter that traditionally supported the more conservative side of the Republicans and the Trump voters thinking of.
Let's pause there. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation right after this. Have a seat. Stay a while.
Thank you.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable.
Which needed to stretch.
I was getting ready to dance, and then we started talking.
Oh, that's all right.
Rich dances to every music.
Yes, dancing is important.
It is important.
Sometimes I don't even need music. We could just recite
dancer,
things.
The dancer here. Fran.
Yeah, that would be great to see the two of you sort of cutting a rug together.
Yeah. I'll teach Rich how to pirouette when I learn myself. Yeah.
Well, good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok is here, Vera Karius-Kelly, Fran Berman, and Rich Honan. We welcome your letters, and here are a few of them. It's panel@wamc.org.
Lisa writes, I've pitched in a $25 donation to Joe Biden at 6:01 this morning, although I must say there are many strong Democratic candidates. One of them must, in capital letters, defeat Trump. But I'm hoping it's Joe. Trump is making our country more divided every second he's in the White House. I cannot understand how anyone in America could support this person. Joe Biden is a good man, honest, ethical, intelligent, and understands diplomacy and how the whole world functions. Please, 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 America, wake up and get this disgrace out of the White House. Please. That's from Lisa.
Pleading her case this early in the morning.
I mean, it is
Lisa,
true that Biden
I bet
has
he really
a lot of
appreciates
experience.
Your donation.
Yeah. And, you know, he does have a lot of experience.
And
especially
Marilyn,
since it was 5 minutes before he actually announced. So she was right there.
Just right there.
And Marilyn writes, Biden doesn't get it. Good morning. I received an email from Joe Biden this morning announcing that he's running. It began, America is an idea based on the founding principle that all men are created equal. Since he was not quoting, could he not have included us women? I like Joe, but not as my president. And that's from Marilyn.
Did it really say, I mean, that sounds a little tone deaf to me.
Rookie error, right?
In the email. And anyway, that's just to me. Wow.
Yes.
Was he not quoting? That was just his language? There
well,
were not quotes around it?
The question here is, what did the document say?
Right.
He was quoting the document. Now, in order to satisfy Marilyn, and I think she makes a very good point, you would have had to change the language in the document, in which case we'll get 25 letters saying.
But she said there were no quotes.
That's what I'm saying. If he was quoting the document, he's quoting the document. And maybe this is just me, you know, the lawyer and me saying, you know, if you're going to cite something, you know, that's one thing. But anyway.
Well, all men are created equal. That's a quote, right? That part of it is a quote.
Well, we'll have to investigate this some more.
Yes. Okay.
Somebody sent us the email.
Mm-hmm. Right, from Marilyn.
You didn't get it, Rich?
I didn't get it.
You're not on that list.
Nor did
Maybe
I.
Maybe it's in my spam.
And Sonia writes, Biden's announcement, just saw a Biden video announcing his candidacy. Can he talk about health care, climate change, wages, immigration, dark money and politics, perpetual war for profit, trade, Social Security? Nope. It was 3 minutes of I'm not Trump. The Democratic Party hasn't seemed to learn that voters need something to vote for instead of something to vote against. They make it clear that they would not vote for another establishment candidate in 2016. I fear a Biden nominee would bring 4 more years of Agent Orange. Thankfully, marijuana is legal in Massachusetts now. In my town, we're going to have 5 of them.
Yeah, I heard that.
Well, I mentioned it to Richie Neal, our congressman mm-hmm. from that district, and I said, our town is going to be high on
the
list.
I think it was high before.
Yeah.
Well, hey, by the way, a request to our listeners, on your list of things that are important to you, we live in the information age. It's really important for these candidates to have a point of view on the information that is being collected about you and what can be done with it and how it's supposed to be used. And they need to have an opinion about net neutrality and data privacy and surveillance, and because this is what we're going to be dealing with more and more. And there are a lot of negative repercussions to not having anything in place to protect us.
I have such great respect for you, Fran, but I do think...
But you disagree with it.
Yeah.
Watch out when
I,
he says that.
I think you...
You don't think they should have an opinion about this?
No, they should. But I think keeping it simple.
Yeah.
The one thing we notice, for example, on fund drives, if we start something, Joe and I have been down this road many times, and we introduce a second thing in, you can have this if you call now, but you could also... Hey, by the way, you could also have a so-and-so if you call now. As soon as you bring in a second... A second diversion, the phone stop. I think people need a solid theme. And to me, the number one theme here is getting rid of Trump, because I think Trump has the ability to lead us into literally a totalitarian fascist state.
And even from a policy standpoint, I agree with you, and I work with privacy every day, obviously, on the startup and technology side, but I just don't think that fits into kind of the big five policy. You know, if you rattled off economy, national security, healthcare, immigration, climate change / environment. You know, if those are the big five, and I'm sure that there's others, but I think that people will get lost in the weeds at the presidential level, even though it's important. But you're talking about some really tough regulatory schemes there, too.
Well, I agree with you guys. And I think from a practical point of view, all of us can't really stuff in all that much stuff in our head at one time. And it's hard to prioritize when you do.
Yeah, but
I'll just say, talking for myself and really talking for all of us, you know, these issues really matter. And, you know, whether we use them in the sound bites or the stuff, it's really important for these candidates to have a point of view. And for me, it will really make a difference what their point of view is when I think about who I want to vote for.
But in the end, you have to make decisions based on who has the ability to come to conclusions about what you're talking about? I mean, you know, I mean, I think that that's really important. I have great respect for Biden. I think he's a very nice man. I think he's a gentleman. And I think he represents, and he has a sort of gravitas that you don't see with everybody else. Everybody else out there sort of grabbing, who are running. Where I think if you're going to beat this guy, you got to beat him with the best you have. So, yeah.
Well, I think the difference is now what we see is that candidates are going after gut issues to defeat or to stand out among the competition. And then once a candidate or several candidates are so once we identify or crystallize a couple of candidates, that's when the finer policies come out. And then maybe, Ran, you might be more satisfied with some of their political positions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But, good, you know, right now they're doing gut stuff, I think.
Good letter, Sonia.
Yeah.
Kevin says, Delegator-in-Chief. The president should be the Delegator-in-Chief, setting the course, yes, but entrusting his staff to do the work. This president, the president then decides, as we have heard in the past, certainly FDR did it that way. It is what we don't have now. Biden knows the government organization chart and how to get things done. That's from Kevin. All right.
I agree. That's really important. You know, you don't want a doctor operating on you that has never done surgery before.
No.
You don't want someone flying your plane that doesn't know their way around planes. I think experience matters.
And Britain,
I actually think that's I think that may be true, but I think that's exactly counter to what the Democrats are going to be talking about during the nomination process.
Yeah, which is why Bernie may win the nomination.
Well, and also, look, it's one of the reasons why Trump won. You know, because I think people are throwing out this idea that maybe not only does experience maybe not matter to some people, I think there's a lot of people on both sides who think that experience within our kind of antiquated political system is actually a detriment, is a negative.
That's true, but it always seems, always, that people run by trying to create an impression of themselves as an outsider, but it seems that people really get things done by understanding how to navigate the inside.
Yes.
Yes,
yeah,
agreed.
See in the current
agreed,
White
except
House.
All the people getting the ink on the Democratic side, well, and look, on the Republican side, too, are the outsiders.
Well, who's really an outsider? They all come from within.
You know, Bernie, I think Sanders has done a nice job of, you know, being a senator for 170 years and still, you know, and still saying
outsider.
I'm an outsider.
At least.
You know?
At least.
Brendan,
from the most homogeneous state in the union.
Yeah, exactly.
And Brendan says, Biden, Kerry, although I like Joe Biden, I can't help comparing him to John Kerry circa 2004. Kerry was a veteran, center-left politician who seemed to have everything needed to win the election, but ultimately couldn't pull it off. You know, I do think the passion that one invests in a candidacy, the ability to spell it out, to excite people so they say, this is my guy, I want to support him. That's right. And certainly Kerry didn't have that.
Oh, no, he was bland. Absolutely.
Well, Biden's more likable, though.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Biden is like universally liked.
And Biden, you know, whatever you say about him, he has this appeal to the working class, and he seems to come from neighborhoods where, you know, he sort of understands what some of the... His wording expresses that he understands what people have gone through.
And Trump is the president. See, that's the problem here. Trump is the president. At another time, you might have wanted a Bernie. You might have wanted somebody else to take on the establishment. But right now, we're in this pickle. And you say, who has the most decorum? Who has the most gravitas? Who is likely to act presidential? And I think that speaks to Biden.
So does he offset
that? I agree with all of this, but it just breaks my heart that, you know, charm matters as much as it does.
Please.
Charisma matters as much as it does. I know it matters
incredibly.
It's
part of leadership.
What I want is somebody who's really good at the public good.
Of course, but
that's
people don't vote along those ideas
I know.
Primarily.
I do.
Yeah, maybe you, but...
And you've just been elected to the most prestigious society in the world. That puts you in...
Shows you what an outlier I am.
All right, let's do one more letter and then we'll take a break.
And this comes from Sally. Our primary goal is to get rid of Trump. Almost anyone in the Democratic Party could put up will be better. We are trying to wean away people who hate gays and women and have no idea what a democratic socialist is. All they hear is socialism. Joe Biden is acceptable to all those idiots. Elizabeth Warren, parenthesis, I love, is not. Pete Buttigieg is not, is certainly not. Antonio Delgado, unlikely. Kamala Harris, two strikes. Bernie will get hammered in an election. Politically, I align with all of them. But the Democrats need to win. We need absolutely to get rid of Trump. I think Joe Biden is our best bet, and that's from Sally. And by the way, that's why Joe Biden is leading in all the polls.
Well, I mean, you know, today it doesn't really... We'll see. We'll see how he does. But, you know, in essence, people have to decide whether they are pragmatists or ideologues. And that is the choice each voter has to make.
I agree with you, and that's why I think Bernie could win the primaries.
Let's see if Biden is still leading after he's been in the race as long as he's been out of the race.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And not only that, it's dangerous to be a leader. Very dangerous to be a leader because then the newspapers think, oh, if I say good things about Biden, am I going to write a newspaper column? No, if you find him scratching his head, then you say so. All right, I read the one. Oh, you
all right. No, we'll take a break. We'll be right back and we'll continue. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We have Alan Chartok, Vera Karius-Kelly, Fran Berman, and Rich Honan. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. We'll finish up the letters and we'll move on to some other topics.
I only have a couple of days. Whatever your name is, Joe. So sorry.
Name tags.
Joe for president.
We need name tags.
My apologies, sir.
No, that's fine.
Matt says, Sanders, Bernie has no shot as a national candidate. He is too progressive, and his voting felon's idea is beyond dumb. His candidacy is a college sophomore's fantasy. There's a person who knows what they want to write. Okay. Well, by the way, do you think he's right about that Bernie was wrong to say that people who were incarcerated shouldn't have the right to vote?
No. I think he just brought up something that was worth discussing. And I think it's very interesting to think about human...
Is that what you do in a presidential...
I don't think it is.
No, I think it's very important because we talk about human rights questions and, how we punish people, not only through prison sentences, but other social punishments. And I think it's a very worthy discussion.
I don't think it is worth discussing in... I agree with Alan in the context of this early in a presidential campaign. And I think, you know, I'm thinking more about what you said about the narratives, how different people have narratives. And I said, well, Bernie has policy. I'm starting to think that Bernie's narrative is I'm going to be the guy taking hard policy positions. I'm going to have actual policy stances, and that will be his narrative. And even if it's something unpopular, you know, deeply unpopular. Mm-hmm. He's going to say, I'm the guy, I went up there and I said it, and you know, I went on Fox News and had a town hall and nobody else would. And I think that's going to be his narrative. And I think what he's going to do is just look for places where he could make some kind of broad, bold policy stroke that really doesn't matter very much in the context of the country right now.
And you have to remember, Rich, who the competition is. See, each of these people have natural competitors within that 20 group. And his, for example, is Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. So he has to be trying to put himself out in front of the other people, like-minded people. And that's what I think what's going on here.
You know, 3 weeks ago when we were having this discussion, everybody was talking about Beto, and you haven't heard that name in a long time.
Oh,
I think
that's
interesting.
Yeah.
No, we haven't heard much about Beto.
No.
Eric says, Rich and other Trump apologists. Hi, panel. I would like, just like Rich and other Trump apologists, to admit that if a liberal Democrat did even a few of the things that Trump has, they would be out for blood. If Obama was meeting with Russians during a campaign, yet denying it publicly, Rich would shout conspiracy.
I don't know if I would shout conspiracy, but I would point out that if the Trump White House had authorized covert surveillance on the campaign of the opposing party, then I think that you would have found an uproar way more than what we had when the Obama White House did the same thing.
Well, maybe the lack of an outpouring of anger is the fact that nobody believed it.
Nobody believed
that Hillary was doing what Trump keeps saying and lying about over and over again.
The one thing that we know is that the government authorized surveillance of the Trump campaign. That's not true.
It is
there's
the
a well, FISA it, court that authorizes it. It's a legal system.
And the FBI, which does its job, and where we know from polling and other things, the FBI agents are basically Republicans. We do know that they decided to do this thing because they thought that the Republic was in danger from Putin and the Russians. It was real simple.
The fact remains that, look, I understand that the FISA court had to approve some of that surveillance, but the fact remains that you had the Obama White House authorized the investigation of an opposing campaign during the campaign. So in answer to that person's question, Can you imagine if the Bush White House or whatever had authorized an investigation of the Obama campaign?
But if there was suspicion about inappropriate interaction with a foreign power, they should have.
Yes. Yeah, but how about, you know, when they had suspicion, you know, when there was suspicion of, you know, Dianne Feinstein, you know, having a Chinese spy in her staff, you know, they gave her a heads up saying, hey, we have suspicion of this. When they had suspicion that the Democratic National Committee, that they were being infiltrated by the Russians, they went to them and said, hey, we have suspicions of this.
Let me remind you of one fact that's very different.
Go ahead, Vera.
We have FBI agents listening into phone calls coming from a foreign person into the United States that they have been observing and following. So when that phone call comes in, they notice it goes to somebody within the Trump campaign. Now, that's when they take that information to a FISA court, lay out the documents, and then they have to ask for authorization.
What they did was they started. First of all, the entire dossier was commissioned commissioned by the Democratic Party.
The dossier came from
the Russians.
Yes, but what's important about that dossier is, was it right or wrong? It was right. And so, therefore, don't start talking to me about that. But I want to remind you of something, Rich. The president of the United States, Barack Obama, walks in for his conversation with Trump, and he announces to him, he says to him, you've got a real problem here. The Russians are infiltrating what's going on. And I don't hear much out of your mouth about that. And it was largely ignored. And basically,
because some years before, when Obama had said, "Oh, you know, the 80s called; they want their foreign policy back." When Romney said, "You have to worry about the Russians," okay?
In essence, a series of different judges made a decision that the FBI should follow this case, and that was.
None having been told, Vera, that the main source of evidence was opposition research that came from an opposing campaign.
See, the main source of information was not the dossier. It was the recorded phone calls, if you look at the specific data.
I'm reading some more letters. I'm getting tired of this. Paul said, question. I'm concerned about the debates. A stage full of people trying to get across their ideas, No. Why not scrap the debate format, which often descends into ad hominem comments, and have a panel interview each candidate for, say, 30 minutes? This approach would allow for people to discuss policy in capital letters and for us to get to know them. What do you think? It ain't going to happen is what I think.
I know, but I love this reader. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. But what do you do? I mean, you want to have people actually talking about their views
being
tested. We were talking about Lincoln during the break. The Lincoln Douglas debates. You know, you speak for an hour, the other guy speaks for an hour and a half.
Douglas won.
Although people say there are people who say Lincoln won the debates. He won the election because of the makeup of the Illinois state legislature.
This is the modern age, and there's got to be a way. I mean, we just have an outrageous number of, you know, candidates in the primary, and, you know, you don't want to have a, you know, 4-day debate, you know, because they're all there. But
do you go by popularity? If you're below X percent, which I know is terrible.
Well,
I don't know, but we have lots of ways of getting to people. you know, we've got YouTube, we've got, you know, God forbid, Twitter, you know, you can't get it in that small number of characters, but we have lots of ways of people getting their points of view out. And then there's got to be some other ways for us to have groups of people come together around particular issues. We do this all the time in the work world, right? We have webinars, we have meetings, we have various things. We can use that in the political world.
But in the work world, we don't have this kind of multilateralism, right, that we have in in this world, in the political world. In the work world, usually by the time we get everybody together, we've gotten it down to, you know, one or two issues or one or two people. Right? Or one or two ways of going, not not 20.
Well, in science, it's a little different sometimes.
In the 2018 midterm elections, says Mike from High Falls, there was a 16% increase in voting amongst 18 to 30-year-olds. This is certainly part of the fuel behind the Dems taking Congress. Bernie and Buttigieg will hold this percentage, if not increase this age bracket turnout. I am sorry, Biden will not. And that's from Mike. I don't know about that, Mike. I think Biden may be everybody's father.
So I was saying earlier during a break that I think that's why the vice presidential position will be incredibly important.
It's going to be a woman, and it's going to be probably a black woman. And it's
It may be a variety of things, but if it is, if it happens to be Biden, it has to be an incredibly dynamic, younger, perhaps female, perhaps African-American.
Sure.
You know, vice president.
Doesn't Kamala Harris pretty much have a lock on at least the vice presidency and maybe the presidency?
I think she's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I do. Possible.
Teresa says, how about having an actual Bernie supporter on your program one day? All I've been hearing is I voted for Bernie in the primary, but from Allen since 2016 and now it's Biden, Biden, Biden. You even managed to have a Trump supporter on. So how about it? Hey, I want to remind
you. Have you ever spoken to Bernie? I can't remember if you have or not.
About 100 times. I mean, we used to have Bernie every third week during the congressional corner. Now he doesn't know where we are or where we live. But we had him on, as you know, tongue in cheek. We know, you know, that we did. And so I certainly think I know the script a little bit. And then we heard from Keith. Obama endorsement. Now that Biden has announced candidacy, will Obama endorse and fundraise for him? Biden was Obama's two-term vice president, a man that Obama calls his brother. It's pretty obvious that Obama wants Biden to win. Biden is the most qualified presidential candidate in the race, and I'm including President Trump in the field. And that's from Keith.
Do you guys think that Barack and Michelle will support the same candidate?
Yes, I do.
Well,
question.
Talk her up in October and find out for us. All right? Let me know.
Friend. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. First News with Ray. We can do this. There is dancing in the studio. I'm a happy man. Good morning. Yeah. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Alan Chartok, Vera Karius, Kelly Fran Berman, and Rich Honan. We have a lot of your letters. A lot of people have a lot to say today, so we'll go through those.
Indeed, that is so true, Joe. Daisy writes, Elizabeth is gaining traction. Last night at She the People, Elizabeth got a standing ovation. She was the clear favorite. Bernie got booed, by the way. Elizabeth is slowly moving up in the polls. People are starting to listen. She's the unflappable turtle. You like that? Unflappable turtle. And she will win nomination, and she will beat Trump.
I saw they had that on the news, and they had a bunch of, you know, moments for everybody. And she was really dynamic and really passionate. It was not Bernie's finest hour. He just seemed grumpy and angry.
Yeah, and he got grumpier and angry. He tried to play the Martin Luther King card, and they were not having it.
Yeah, they were not
all.
Having it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Young people certainly
of course,
like,
that was just a sound
like Elizabeth
bite,
so. Warren. Yeah, yeah. You know, among this sort of undergraduate crowd, I see a lot of support for the kinds of ideas she's talking about. They're worried about her being a polarizing figure, of course, when they think pragmatically as well. We just discussed it in one of our club meetings, but they like her. In
what
essence.
Club?
Oh, I'm advisor to the Democrats at Siena College.
Oh. Okay.
Vera, you are a multidimensional person.
And Jeanette said, Joe Biden, why don't the presidential candidates decide on a VP at the start of their campaign? That's been tried, by the way. People have done that in the past. And if Joe Biden would choose a younger VP, perhaps a woman, it might make a much stronger ticket. Agreed. Talk to the other 19 candidates running. Get a ticket together. Oh, yeah. The 19 others are going to turn around and say, yeah, yeah, for the good of the party, we're dropping out.
So 19. Wasn't Stacey Abrams being discussed?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I think it was Biden who met with Stacey Abrams.
Yes.
Earlier, a good visual, optical, as I say. I agree that the main goal is to beat Trump, but the ticket also needs to outline the policy for the top five issues, as one of your panelists outlined. Would Biden fix the immigration problem? I'm sure you will hear.
I feel like the stronger ticket is Kamala Harris for the top spot and Biden as vice president.
Stop it. Okay.
He's not going for that.
I know he's not. But, I mean, that kind of brings in all the aspects of the party. It gives the experience. Basically, he serves the same role for her as he did for Obama.
Leah says, question for Rich.
Yes.
Last week, just before you went off the air, Libby asked Rich, why are you in favor of Trump? There was no time for an answer. I like that question again. Rich, why are you in favor of Trump?
I'm in favor of Trump, first on the policy side, because I agree with his policies. And I think I've had a lot of my friends say, Rich, I don't disagree with his policies. I just hate him. So on the policy side, I like what he's doing with the economy. I like what he's doing with reducing regulation. I know there's lots of pushback on that. I like what he's doing on the national security side.
You like what he's doing with climate change?
I don't like what he's doing with climate change. I don't like what he's doing. The biggest problem I have with him and that people of my ilk have is on the debt side, you know, on the blowing up of the deficit, that's a problem.
Yeah.
I like that. But the real reason, I think that most of what I have much less of a problem getting rid of all the rhetoric and all the crap and all that kind of stuff. I think, to me, a lot of what he says makes common sense to me. Yeah.
So you like what he's doing with women? Do you like what he's doing with climate? Do you like what he's doing with enriching himself? I mean, come on.
The answer is I think that he's on the big five on what I put on the big five issues. I think he's doing well. But the other thing I like, what I really like, is that you may disagree. I know you do disagree. I know what he thinks. He goes out there. You know, Bernie gets all this. You know, Bernie just says something, and everybody's like, "Oh, he's saying his policy. He came out and said it." Trump says that every day, several times a day.
I think
policy wise,
kind of lacks on consistency.
No, see, I actually think that his underlying policies are fairly consistent. I know he goes up and down with vicissitudes, but I think his policy on immigration has been consistent. His policy on the economy has been consistent. I think that he's transactional, and I know you guys use that as a pejorative term, and I don't think there's anything wrong with being transactional. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything wrong with being swayed by your aides from time to time, or changing your mind on things, or having one position
one day in a 10,000.
No, I think he has having one position on one issue and a different position
on
another.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
I think, you know, when you mentioned the debt issue, I hear that a lot from conservatives that I speak with, in terms of that is a fundamental issue to which Republicans have been married to, and this has been entirely unmoored as a principle now for Republicans.
I don't think the Republicans were that pure about it, even though they paid lip service, but they were still spending just as much money as anybody else.
This is since, I think, the Bush administration started this trend, but now it's certainly an issue to be discussed among Republicans for sure. But the other question I had for you was, what are your thoughts on, you know, you said you're pretty pleased with the economic policies. What about the trade wars and the sort of engagement with or disengagement with China, the European Union, with NAFTA? Some of those concerns, I have some friends that are, you know, not Trump supporters, but sort of more traditional Republicans, and they have found a lot of problems within that conversation.
And that's where he gets a lot of, if you read that, so I read the Wall Street Journal every day, and you'd probably be surprised to see how, the Wall Street Journal, has three editorials every day, and the middle one is always pretty viciously anti-Trump, and it's always on something like China or something
so,
like that.
So Barry jumps on the bandwagon, Rich, and he has the following question. Thanks to all. He says, please ask Rich this. Is there anything in capital letters Trump could do that would cause Rich to abandon him?
Well, if he had colluded with the Russians, that would have done it. I think
there's any chance he did collude with the Republicans?
Russians, you meant.
I mean, I'm
Republicans.
So
he certainly colludes with the Republicans.
You are so right, Vera. With the Russians.
No. And neither does Bob Mueller, and neither does anybody else.
Oh, no, no.
But no,
Bob
there's
Mueller
lots of things.
Bob Mueller said that there was no proof of it. Well, he gets up there and he says, the Russians are good.
I fired
Comey because to end that Russian thing. That's not collusion? Come on.
It's not even close, but okay. I'll tell you, there were make me abandon. He came close on the tax law. I'll tell you by kind of acceding to Paul Ryan and getting rid of the state and local tax deduction. And basically punishing Democratic states.
Forget about Democratic states.
I came close to saying this is not what I elected the guy for.
He was punishing Rich. That's who he was punishing.
And I think what would make me abandon him would be if he was inconsistent with what I voted for in the first place. I was pleased to see that he wanted to make health care an issue and then I was displeased to see that he allowed the Senate Republicans to say we're not going to make that an issue. Remember that a couple of weeks ago he said, the Republicans should be the party of health care, and I said, yeah, you're right. Hold their feet to the fire. And then he kind of buckled under to presumably to Mitch McConnell, and they said we don't want any part of that.
And I
was very disappointed with that.
Are you kidding? He talks so many. His mouth has so many apertures, left, right, middle, that you really wonder whether anything he says means anything at any given time.
He's never been a linear – look, he's never been a linear either thinker or talker. And those of us who knew – back from the old CNBC days, you could always you could see the – when they had him on the phone, you could see the anchors always – being nervous because, they'd give him 2 minutes and he would take 12 and there was no stopping point, and he would say four different things in a single answer. So he's always been like that. And I knew that when I voted for him.
Hi, panel. I am listening to Rich defending Trump and still trashing Obama and Hillary. Has he read the Mueller report? I just started reading it. And let me tell you, it's not good for Trump, not good for the Republicans, and definitely not good for the country. Trump has to go. Mike in Saratoga Springs.
Yeah, and that's why I think congressional hearings are very important, because it further contextualizes and fills in gaps for those people who either did not read the Mueller report, only read sections, or obviously we all have remaining questions.
And there's some holes and questions. I mean, that was the Hillary editorial yesterday. And it was powerful, and I agree in the sense that she said, look, we have processes for this by which we can do a full and thorough investigation. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't jump to anything.
Margie says, oh, Rich, come on. The Trump campaign threw itself in front of the FISA court. I do not care what political stripe you are. Russian interference leading directly to the Trump campaign equals investigation. How can you argue with that? We were and are under attack. Cut it out, says Margie.
Well, that we know. We are under attack because the report confirmed that. We know the Russians are continuing to meddle. We know Kristen Nielsen brought this up as a significant issue as the former Homeland
Security.
Was told to keep quiet. And so, and may I remind everybody of the infamous former Lieutenant General Flynn.
And may I remind everybody that the Obama administration did exactly nothing about the Russian meddling. And I think, by the way, meddling is the exact correct term. Last time I was on, I still have this question. The whole idea of we're taking out ads on social media that are, anti-Hillary, but they're not from the group you thought was anti-Hillary. They're from a different group that was anti-Hillary.
I think it's wrong that they do that, and I think
but the Obama administration didn't take any action.
But the whole Cambridge Analytica thing is about having that being done by a foreign power. Mm-hmm. That puts it in a different scenario it being done by someone in the U.S., which is still not okay to be manipulated, but being done by someone in the U.S.
Then, Fran, where was the Obama administration on that? Well, it was going on under their watch. They knew about it. They determined not to take very significant action. In everything I've read, it's not. You didn't see very significant action being taken. You didn't even see it being brought out to the world.
Because it was in the beginning process.
Towards the end of the campaign, it
was
to be
at the beginning
out.
Process, and you have to recall that President Obama was made aware of it. He had a direct meeting with President Putin and spoke to Putin about it, warned him. We have records of that, whereas we don't know when President Trump met with Putin what was discussed, because we have no such records in comparison. We also know that President Obama asked and forced multiple Russian diplomats slash, you know, political activists in this country to leave the country immediately. He closed down a compound that was used to do research on Americans. We arrested, under the Obama administration, the CIA arrested multiple spies that were active. So it was beginning to emerge as a serious issue. Now, what you would expect from a Trump administration to continue to intensify that level of scrutiny and investigate and allow the Homeland Secretary to investigate social media manipulation and sort of just roll up in that direction, and that didn't happen. It abruptly stopped, and that was the concern, because suddenly, you know, it was intensifying this investigation into Russian activities, and then suddenly it stopped.
Sarah, if there's anybody in this country who is still making their electoral choices based on ads that they see on social media, okay, then I'm not sure how much I could do for them. Okay?
But there are lots of people.
Something
News illegal
as their only source of information and vote on that. I mean, this is obvious.
I would look
that
at
this
the real. I would go. I would do what people are supposed to do, which is go to the primary source. Go to the candidates. Listen to the candidates themselves. Why are you listening to any?
Listen to 10,000 lies.
This is you living here in New York, in upstate New York. You were a highly educated person looking at all these different sources.
I'm going to read some more.
Go to law school.
Can we just go to Fran real quick? Because I thought your point was interesting about the actual crime of what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that manipulation is not good. We don't like it. We shouldn't, we shouldn't be susceptible to it. But it's not illegal. Mm-hmm. And there are things that need to be investigated as to the legality, and that has to do with a foreign power trying to manipulate our elections. That is an illegal thing.
I thought you said manipulation is not. Oh, you're saying internal domestic manipulation.
I'm saying domestic.
Okay, I understand.
Not illegal.
Okay,
Not good, but not illegal.
Okay, here we go. Mm-hmm. Jesse says, hypocrisy. I get so sick of hearing, well, if a Democrat did that, well, if a Republican did that. Have some integrity and be willing to call out your own party when they do wrong. Mm-hmm. There you go. And then we've heard from John, who said, wow, Rich, listen back to today's broadcast. Listen as you avoid the truth and pivot to offer other issues as you defend a criminal President Trump. Wow, Rich, so disappointing that you will stand for the white supremacist traitor-in-chief and not for our constitutional republic. And that's from John. And Reed says, fact check, the dossier was commissioned by the Republicans via Fusion GPS before Trump won the nomination. Only after that did the funding continue. The opposition research come from the Democratic Party, and that's from Reed. And Mike says,
the dissemination was through the Democratic Party.
But Mike, in essence, you get a correction on your facts, so you got to accept that.
Mike says,
what I said was that they paid for the dossier. I stand by that statement because
Mike
it's true.
Says, incarcerated voters, with over 7 million Americans incarcerated and disenfranchised, the idea that this is not important right now speaks to the privilege of people to whom it's not important. And that's from Mike. And
yep, then, thank you.
And then Paul says,
Mike, good
Biden,
point.
As someone in the under 40 demographic, I would love to see someone run that won't be in their 80s during their first term. We need some new blood in office. And Charles said, regardless of whether Trump is impeached and forced out of office or mentally incompetent or loses the 2020 election, this nation will unfortunately not be done with him. He will continue to act as if he were still in office. He will meddle, attempt to throw his weight around, disrupt any attempt at civility that might diminish his wealth and prestige and continue to be a pain in the... I rue the person who will be the 46th president of the United States. That individual and we as a nation, unfortunately, will still have to contend with his lunacy. It's sad and frightening. And that's from Charles. And then Neil says, people have to realize that at this point, the only thing that really matters is beating Trump. We tend to get used to all the craziness, but we need to step back and realize this is not normal and this is not right. Mm. There's a time enough to argue policy and who did what to whom later. Right now, we must bend all our efforts ensuring the awfulness ends.
30-second warning.
Okay, and Mark says, Republicans will win because they have people like Frank Lutz, an evil genius who can dress up a pig with lipstick and sell it to us. Yeah, okay. Hence, inheritance tax becomes the death tax.
Yeah, the speech guy.
Another one?
We're good.
No, okay.
Richard and I were just going over Frank Lutz of he's a Republican pollster who helps message brand and candidates.
Right.
Thank you to everybody. Thank you, Alan. Don't forget the Peak Concert, WAMC.org, for more information on that. It is Friday, May 3rd. Vera Carius Kelly, thank you very much. Fran, again, congratulations. And thank you for being with us.
Everybody, make sure you vote.
And Rich, thank you very much. Always great to have you here.
It is.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Thank you.